Hi, it's Marshall Crenshaw here, and I'm back on the Rock Solid Podcast.
To be. This is small town music. This is big town music. He's ahead of his time, you know, but he can't use it. If only he could prove it. Well, tomorrow's just a song away, a song away, a song away.
Hey everybody, welcome to Rock Solid, the comedy podcast for all things music, both new and classic. I'm Pat Francis, and joining me in the Zoom room to promote the release of the new compilation album called From the Hellhole, please welcome back to the show, Mr. Marshall Crenshaw. Hello, Marshall.
Hello, Pat. Hello again.
Hello again. Are you in New York right now?
Yeah, I'm at home. This is my actual bed that I sleep in.
Thank you for allowing us to come into the bedroom for a half hour or so. I appreciate it.
Sure.
So real quick, let me tell everybody, From the Hellhole will be released on August 29th on all formats, including colored vinyl. So head over to yeprock.com, pre-order this thing. You're going to want to have it in your collection for sure. And for all things about Marshall Crenshaw, go to marshallcrenshaw.com or go to Facebook at Marshall Crenshaw Official, and Instagram is at marshall.crenshaw. And with that, here we go. Yeah. Marshall, how did you come up with the title for From the Hellhole?
Well, at some point I started calling my workspace out in the back of the barn the Hellhole. It's my studio space and my practice space, and I was making records back there for a while. And I just started calling it that because it was a mess, you know, and it was like a hoarder's kind of space, and I didn't really know what to do about it. You know, I'd start looking through stuff and would just become like, you know, like paralyzed mentally. Like, I don't know, do I want this? Do I not want it? You know, like, so things just piled up for a long time, and I started, you know, the Hellhole. I guess I got the idea from the Spinal Tap song, maybe.
Okay.
Get me out of this hellhole. But, you know, it's not a hellhole anymore. We cleaned it.
All right.
My wife and I, we got a dumpster, and we wound up having it, like, come back and forth three times. But we finally got the whole barn straightened out. And so now but it was a hellhole. When I did the record, it was a hellhole.
So does that mean that the formerly the hellhole, is that ready for you to record new music?
It could, you sure it could be, yeah.
Okay. I'm always trying to poke you for a new album. But look, I'm happy that we have this collection. I've been listening to it for a couple weeks now, and it is really great. Folks, if you were never privy to the EP series that Marshall released from, I'm going to say 2012 to 2015, and you've wanted to hear these songs, now's your chance. The new compilation contains 14 tracks, and they sound a little bit different. Did you play around with them any? Is there remixing or anything done on these?
Yeah, I just couldn't resist, you know, tampering with most of them. Like, of the EP tracks, they're 11 of them on the CD, on the new album.
Yes.
And, you know, just over time, I would hear little things or bigger things. And I was like, boy, I got to fix that. You know, because I knew at some point there'd be a re-release.
Yeah.
You know, the EP series was a finite thing, and it was just for like a limited group of people. It was like a subscription thing. Right. But, I just felt like it was really a good body of work, and I wasn't going to just let it go into the oblivion, you know. And so when I got a chance, I was going to fix it. And that's what I've done now. It's like all these things. And besides the EP tracks, you know, there were some other things on there too, and it's just miscellaneous stuff that I thought would go together nicely on an album, you know, as an album listening experience.
Yeah, the sequencing is great. It really works. And you kick off the album with I Don't See You Laughing, which was also the first track on the first EP. And I've always loved that song.
A tower of glass shining in the sunlight, with every floor desolate and bare. Nothing is left of all the sound and fury of money and lies that went on in there. And this was your own brilliant invention, a fool's paradise of your own divine. Last night on the news were scenes from your downfall, a faraway look in your weary eyes. Well, I don't see you laughing now.
It's funny, I just now listened to it with my wife because we got the LPs over the weekend, you know. They sent me, I think, three of them. I get three copies of it to keep all to myself, but you know, we had tested it out on my stereo, and of course I'm like running around, you know, like, oh, the bass is too boomy, you know. And like, she's trying to listen to it and I'm fooling around with the stereo, but I do like that song. I think it's a really beautiful track. It's kind of, my mother told me that she didn't like that song. She said, you sound so angry on that song. And I'm like, well, sometimes I get angry.
Your mom told you this?
She did.
Okay.
You know, way back then. I'm like, I guess I thought I must really sound angry, you know, for her to bother her. At least I sounded that way to her.
Well, but I think we learned from our parents what we shouldn't say to our children.
Could be, yeah. I don't know. You really scrambled my brain with that one. But.
Okay. The tour starts back up on September 10th in Columbus, Ohio. Will these CDs and vinyl be available at the shows? Or is that too much to do?
It's too much to do, but the label asked me to do it, so I will.
Okay. All right.
It is a pain to drag all that stuff around.
It's a lot.
But I'll do it. I'll have some swag, some merch, some whatever product, you know. Yeah. That was when that start, when all started happening back all those many, many years ago. I thought, well, that seems a kind of an imposition, you know, like the people bought a ticket to the show and now you want them to buy more stuff. I thought that's a little crass, you know, but then it just became normal procedure.
Well, I find that when people are out at a show and they've just seen you live, then they're just all the more excited about the music. And so, yeah, when they leave, they'll plop down some more money and buy some stuff.
It turns out that way, yeah. So the label asks, you know, I hardly ever do it. I hardly ever have product, but going forward with this thing, I'll have some at the shows.
And is the tour still called 40 Plus Years in Showbiz?
Yeah, I'm sticking with that indefinitely. You know, it seems like it has gravitas and it's a nice little banner to hang on the whole thing. And it's still literally true. So
it is.
I'm sticking with it. Yeah.
No matter how many years follow, it'll always be 40 plus.
Right.
Even if it's plus 10, it's still plus.
Right. Until it gets to 50.
And then I guess do 50.
Then
plus.
I'll switch it to 50. Yeah. I'll say something about the 50. If I get that far, then I'll say something about the 50,
now, speaking
50
of
50 year milestone.
Yes. Speaking of years going by, in November, you're going to turn 72 years old. How old are you in your head?
Like all ages, no age. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I try not to think about the passage of time too much, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm just like a forward-going kind of guy, you know? I don't like to backtrack. if I'm going someplace, I'll do almost anything to avoid backtracking, you know, like, I just, if I think too much about it, then, you know, I try to avoid nostalgia. That's like a rabbit hole that I could go down and never come back from. I don't want that to happen. I got some bad news last night about Dave Edmonds. You might have.
I read that too.
And that really conjures up a lot of vivid memories. And, you know, like that time when I first was hearing his stuff, you know, it was like I said, I already used the word vivid, but, you know, it was like a really vivid time. And every now and then I wondered about him, you know, like, how's he doing? Is he around still? Is he still on the upside of, you know, the earth? And anyway,
because I always think, you know, Nick Lowe's still out there and doing it. And I just actually put the Rock Pile on a couple weeks ago and listened to it. So, yeah, I was thinking about Dave Edmonds too, wondering, what Dave's doing. And then, sadly, when you hear what happened, it's, you know, it brings a lot of stuff into focus. But I live my life as today's the day. I wake up and here's the day. I'm not thinking about what's going on in the past either. I'm thinking about, I woke up and I'm like, oh, I get to talk to Marshall today and we get to talk about this great music. And then tomorrow, that'll be another day. But yeah,
that's a good way to be.
Yeah.
To be in the present tense. It doesn't mean you have amnesia or anything, but it's just, you know, you're alive now and today's the day. And that's a good way. I'm with you. That's a good way to be.
Let me talk about one of the tracks that's on the album that has never been on a Marshall Crenshaw album before. It's a Rare Earth cover of I Just Want to Celebrate. That song went to number 7 in 1971. Is this a newly recorded song or just new to us?
It's just new to you, I guess. I did it in, I think it was 2014 when I first did it. And it was a request from do you know Michael Shelley from WFMU?
I do not.
Oh, okay. Michael's he said this radio, WFMU is a really great New York area radio station and listener sponsored free form, extremely, extremely eclectic all the time. But Michael has like a rock and roll show on Saturday mornings and he's been on the air a long time and we're friends and such. And they do pledge drives on FMU and they did this one thing on Michael's show where just different artists that he reached out to recorded, the package was called Super Hits of the 70s, and it looked like a Ron Coe album or one of those old TV albums. Yeah, so I did that song. I always really liked that record and that song. That line about I put my faith in, but the people let me down, that always kind of amused me. So I did that one all by myself in the hellhole, and then it came out on that fundraiser CD that they did on FMU, but that's the only time it's ever been out until now.
Okay, so now it's available on a proper Marshall Crenshaw release, which is great. We love it.
That's right. Yeah, it's on an album, like a real album. You know, like people relate to albums, right?
I think so. That's how I like to listen to music. I like to drop the needle and listen top to bottom.
Another thing about this album, as long as we're plugging it,
sure.
is it's like a half a covers album, you know, like every once in a while over the years, people have said to me like this or that or the other thing, like, well, oh man, you ought to do a guitar, all guitar instrumental album. I haven't done that, but people every now and then say, oh, you should do a covers album, all covers. Well, this is halfway. It's covers, you know. And the Rare Earth tune is one of them.
And you've always done covers here and there. I remember you did Take Me With You. I think that was on What's in the Bag.
That's true.
I can't disguise the pounding of my heart. It beats so strong. It's in your eyes. What can I say? They turn me on. And I don't care where we go. Don't care what we do. I don't care, pretty baby. Just take me with you. Come on and touch the place in me. It's calling out your name. We want each other.
And yeah, you know, track two on this album is They Long to Be Close to You, you know, a Carpenter's classic written by Bacharach and David. It's a great version. I love it so much.
Why do birds suddenly appear? Every time you are near, just like me, they long to be close to you. Why do stars fall down from the sky? Every time you walk by, just like me.
Thank you. I just got the idea one day when I was doing the EPs, because, you know, that was the cover tune that was on the second EP in the series. And I mean, I just always loved that record. I've got this little anecdote in the press release about it, how I was talking to Dennis Dykin one time backstage at a Smithereens show, because I'm a guest vocalist with them from time to time.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
And, you know, it was the first one. So we were like, just him and me in the dressing room. So we're like having a conversation, you know, like just sitting around. And we got onto the topic of Don't Worry Baby by the Beach Boys and how much we both love that record.
Yeah.
And Dennis said, you know, I've never tried heroin, but like, according to what I've read about it, you know, like the way that record makes me feel, it's like what heroin feels like. And, you know, I thought it was a kind of a funny twist in the conversation, but I got what he meant. You know, I said, oh, you mean like, you know, it just induces this state of complete calm and like, you know, it stops time. Is that what you mean? Is that what you're talking about? And because that, you know, I've never tried heroin either, but that's, I've never tried that drug.
Yeah.
But that's what I've read about it, you know, is that it's just like, what's that line in the Tom Petty song? I fell in love with a girl on China White. We were married. We were married for a year one night. So that idea of what it feels like. Tom would know what it felt like, you know. And anyway.
That's a cool tune. Girl on LSD, I think, is that song.
Girl on LSD is a great one. But anyway, so Dennis. So there's, you know, Dennis, Don't Worry Baby, to heroin. And I'm kind of going, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. And like that Carpenter record kind of did that same thing to me
Yeah,
back when I first heard it, it's like druggy in a good kind of way.
Yeah, at the beginning, plus
I was in this kind of bad space, you know, bad headspace the first time I heard that riff. Sort of, it calmed me. I never heard of them and didn't know anything about them, but it did remind me of a Brian Wilson record, and I did just kind of give into it when I was listening to it. And so anyway, I decided to cover it and try to do like an exact note for note cover of the arrangement. I thought people would hear it and they would go, what is this? This makes no sense that he's doing this song. But
that's okay anyway. I like when an artist does a cover that I wouldn't expect them to do.
Yeah. And I have to give a shout out to a friend of mine who's no longer walking the earth, speaking of things like that. This is a guy named Rob Morseberger, and he was just really a brilliant, multifaceted, multi-talented musician, composer, and he just did all the orchestration that's on there. You know, we talked about it, but that was the goal, is just to copy the Carpenter's arrangement exactly note for note. And then till the end, you know, I decided to get into like a psychedelic dub mix fade out on the thing.
Yeah.
With Steve Bernstein on the trumpets. You know, he's like a jazz guy, great artist. So I just decided to have some fun with the whole thing.
Yeah, it's a cool one. There's like, I think there's 5 tracks on this album that you co-wrote with a gentleman named Dan Byrne. Who's Dan Byrne? Should I know him? Because I don't think I do.
Yeah, he's an artiste, singer-songwriter, makes records, been out there for a really long time. I'm going to say since the 1990s, you know, he's made a kind of a splash on Arrival back then. And, he's just a really good writer. And also somebody who is not afraid of the blank page. He'll just sit there and fill that blank page, and it'll be interesting. When you pick it up and look at it, you go, wow. And so, he's just somebody like that with a real good work ethic about writing. Can I just tell you this quick story about him?
You can tell me any story you want. I just want to add that the two of you do great work together, because these songs that you guys co-wrote are fantastic. And, you know, like, I especially love Red Wine so much.
Oh, nice. I'm glad he liked that one. That's cool.
Drinking red wine in the amber glow. Red wine with the candles low. It's getting late. The world's in a state. Drinking red wine. Got my head on straight. Breath slows down, red wine. My troubles to drown. It's all right. The end of the night. Listening to the rain and a faraway train. Drinking red wine. Well, the clouds roll in today, and I tried to stop.
And now you tell your story about Dan Byrne, please.
Dan and I both worked on a movie called Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story.
Yes.
You might know that one.
Oh, yes.
And but I didn't meet him then. I met him afterwards. And where I met him was up in Anchorage, Alaska, because we both got booked to play this performing arts center in Anchorage. And I got invited, and I'd never been there before, and I thought, sure, I'll cross it off the list of states, you know, because now I've been to all 50 states. I've spent at least one night in every one of them. Anyway, I got up there, and I met him, and we played the show. It was great, you know. The first one was Anchorage. The first show was Anchorage, and then we went over to Kodiak Island to play the Orpheum Theater in Kodiak, Alaska.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we did that one. It was great, too. And nice old Orpheum Theater, you know. And but then the next morning, we couldn't leave. We were supposed to take this little commuter plane to go back to Anchorage. And but the wind was too crazy. And we were stuck in this little airport in Kodiak for the entire day. We're supposed to leave at 10 o'clock in the morning. And didn't leave until like 11 o'clock that night. And we're sitting in this little airport all day. But the whole time, or a lot of the time, I look over at him and he's sitting on the floor with the notebook. He's filling pages in the notebook, writing a song about us being stuck in the airport. You know, whatever it was, he's just writing and writing and writing. And I don't do that, you know. So anyway, we finally got up in a plane. I've told this story before, like, podcasts and stuff, but we finally got on a plane and it was, I knew that we were going to die. And so did he. It was terrible. You know, I mean, it really takes balls to live in Alaska and deal with the elements up there and stuff, but we did it. And we lived to tell about it.
I wonder when the passengers are scared, I'm hoping the pilots aren't scared.
God, I mean, at least you're pretty sure that they've done it, that it's routine business for them to fly high winds. But, you know, like about a year after we had that experience, I remember there was this senator from Alaska, one of those old guys, you know, who's 150 years old and still in the Senate. But he retired, went back home to Alaska. And what do you know? Sure enough, he died like a little while later on in one of those little planes. Ugh. Just picked the wrong day to fly, you know.
Terrible.
Terrible. He was an asshole, but it was still terrible.
Searching for a romantic summer getaway? Escape with Rich Girl Summer, the new Audible original from Lily Chu. The exquisitely talented Philippa Hsu returning to narrate her fifth Lily Chu title. This time, Philippa is joined by her real-life husband, Stephen Pasquale. Set in Toronto's wealthy cottage country, a.k.a. the Hamptons of Canada, Rich Girl Summer follows the story of Valerie, a down-on-her-luck event planner posing as a socialite's long-lost daughter, while piecing together the secrets surrounding a mysterious family and falling deeper and deeper in love with the impossibly hard-to-read and infuriatingly handsome family assistant, Nico. Caught between pretending to belong and unexpectedly finding where she truly fits in, Valerie learns her summer is about to get far more complicated than she ever planned. She's in over her head and head over heels. Listen to Rich Girl Summer now on Audible. Go to audible.com/richgirlsummer.
Another song seeing the light of day, at least this version on the Hellhole album, is the demo for Walking Around, which was on your 1991 album, Life's Too Short.
Showdown, went on too long about four. God knows you sure surprised me. Sometimes I just don't know what to think anymore. But listen now, let's take a walk anyway. Let's go walking around on a warm Saturday now. It's late and sounds. Maybe this will be the last time. We might be each better off without the other.
What about this version made you decide to include it on From the Hellhole?
Well, a guy that I know just reached out to me one day out of left field and said, "Hey man, you know that old song of yours?" And he told me that it was just his like one of his all-time favorite songs. And he said, "Do you have a demo of it, or do you have like an alternate take of it?" Or just so obsessed with this song, I just thought I'd ask you. And I like this guy, and I said, "Are you sure?" You know, and I dug out the recording of it that I made at home back in 1991, and I played it, and I'm like, "This is really good," you know. You know, like when I did the album version, the song was maybe a year and a half old by then. Mm-hmm. But on this home recording, I just had written it, you know, so it had that spirit to it of just like it's a new song and I'm excited about it, you know, and you can kind of feel that. And so I just was looking for a reason to put it out, or like a way to put it out, like maybe on a B-side of something, or but and so this was the time. I just figured it doesn't really fit in the same time frame as all the rest of the stuff, but right. You know, I'll put it on. Plus, that way I can put a date on the front of the album that was in the 20th century, and that people will be drawn to that. You know,
right?
When people see, oh, it's from 19 something, they'll go, oh yeah, I know I'm gonna like this. You know, because a lot of people that like my stuff, they like the older stuff the best. You know, so I figured that I just did it. Part, not really for that reason, but I figured that would be a plus to be able to put a 20th century date on the record. You know,
I feel like now, what I'm worried about now is people are going to reach out now all the time and ask you to send them some demos of their favorite songs.
If it's somebody that has my email address and it's somebody that I like, then maybe I'll do it.
Now, you just said that some of your fans like your old stuff the best. I feel like you are one of these timeless artists where it all feels, you know, I don't want to say the same, but it all feels current, but it all feels nostalgic all at the same time. So well, that's just how, that's my take on it. Like, I don't hear one of your records and think, oh, this sounds dated. You know what I mean?
Oh, thank you.
Hear something brand new and think, oh, he's trying to do this now. I just feel like you're always doing what your heart tells you to do.
Well, that's correct. I mean, okay. You know, you said it, and I appreciate that. I mean, that's really the truth of it. I do have this kind of like big catalog that spans all these many years, and it's just the reality of it. A lot of people, you know, they know like the early stuff better because
right.
It got a lot of hype and promo at the time that it came out. And so it, you know, registered with a lot of people. And so they have, you know, like these kind of memories of it and such, you know, and it's like part of their life history and all that. But, you know, all of it to me is like, I mean, some of it I've kind of like, you know, it's, I don't know, like some of it brings back bad memories, and so I avoid it.
Right.
But for the most part, I do like the stuff. You know, I like my catalog, and I like going out and playing on the 40-plus year anniversary, whatever it is, the tour thing. You know, I like being able to just take stuff from the whole range, you know, like different points on the timeline every night. I've never done, like, an oldie show. Oh, I did once, and I hated doing it. But so I don't do that. It's just like I draw from the whole timeline.
Yeah, I think that's what fans want to hear. They want to come and they want to hear you do everything from the career.
I do have, yeah, I have that.
Yeah.
The flexibility with the people that come. And so, you know, I love that. And it's all good.
And the way that you said earlier in the episode, how you were sometimes would wonder what Dave Edmunds was doing. I like to do episodes like this because there are people out there that probably haven't kept up with your career and they need to know about it. So that's why I like interviewing you. I want to get the word out there that Marshall Crenshaw is still out there performing live, killing it on stage, and still releasing and remastering and reworking some material that you might never have heard before. So...
That's exactly right. That's the story right there. Plus, I have a really good band now too. So
yeah, tell us who's in the band. I know, but tell the listeners.
All right, I toured for like 11 years with a group called the Bottle Rockets. Great, outstanding rock group, you know, with a big legacy of their own. And I did that for a long time, and then. All of a sudden, lockdown came along, the COVID pandemic. You remember that, right?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah. Well, one of the guys in the band decided that he liked being at home and didn't ever want to be out of lockdown. He was going to make his own lockdown. So, you know, he just retired from the road. And so that was the end of the bottle for us. But then like the year after that happened, when we could all go back out and live our lives again, I did some shows with just the three remaining Bottle Rockets. And then a couple of them went their separate ways. One of the guys joined Sun Volt, and then Keith, you know, started working with a woman named Sarah Borges. And, you know, like, so finally it was just down to me and the drummer from the Bottle Rockets, Mark Ortman. He was the last standing Bottle Rocket. And so he's in the band now still. And then, but I had a gig, you know, and I'm like, okay, it's only Mark can do it. It can't just be the two of us. What do I do? Okay. So I reached out to a guy that I'd just done an album project with, or worked on an album project with, a guy named Fernando Perdomo, you know, like really super talented, multifaceted guy, great guitar player, jaw-dropping guitar player. So he's in the band, and then the bass player is Derek Anderson, and I was on some multi-artist shows with Derek, and I just thought, this guy's great. I really like him. He's cool. Because, you know, when you're putting a band together, you have to think about the onstage thing and the offstage thing, too. It's like really important, you know. So I figured this will be nice, you know, the group of us. The conversation will be like not the usual stuff. It'll be different. You know, we'll hang out together. And it's been really, really great. They're great people. The music is nice. I really am happy with it. Like, more than happy with it. And that's the story. It's a four-piece rock and roll band, but we got, you know, like a good chemistry, and it's kind of a unique noise that we make, I think.
Yeah, and Derek, I saw him for the first time. He was playing bass with the Bangles, and then that spurred me to buy his solo album, which is excellent. If you don't own that, people seek out Derek Anderson's solo work.
Derek Anderson, yeah, and he's making a new record too. The songs I've heard are like really excellent.
That's great.
So, do you live in LA?
We just relocated in January to North Carolina.
Oh, okay. From LA?
From Los Angeles. Yeah, we lived there for 30 years, but my wife got a job teaching screenwriting here at University of North Carolina School of the Arts. So it was too good of an opportunity to pass up. And you're coming through North Carolina, so I'm going to come to that show.
Oh, good, good, good. Yeah, you know, some of my favorite people that I know live in North Carolina.
Yay!
So, I'm always happy to have a reason to be there and see my friends, Chris Stamey and Peter Holzapfel and all those fellas and gals.
Yeah, we're enjoying it so far. Now, Fernando, he also put together one of the tracks on this new album. It's your cover of Couldn't I Just Tell You, Todd Rundgren's song. And that was on the 2022 release Someone Anyone, which was a tribute album.
I feel the way that I do. I wanna talk with you and put it in your ear, though you don't care to hear. But couldn't I just tell you the way I feel? I can't keep it bottled up inside. And could we pretend that it's no big deal and there's really nothing left to hide?
Yeah, it was a track by track remake of the Something Anything album by Todd Rundgren. Well, that's one that was an album that I just crawled inside of it and lived there for about a year back when it came out. It was like that one and the Stevie Wonder album that was out at that time called Music of My Mind.
Yeah.
Like the first one of that cycle of Stevie Wonder albums from the 70s. So it was like those two albums, just that was my whole brain for about a year. And then Fernando reached out to, actually it wasn't Fernando, it was a friend of both of ours, a guy named Ken. But anyway, the Someone Anyone album.
Yeah.
But I was the only one who decided to just do my own track from top to bottom. Cause I, you know, the Something Anything album is just all Todd, you know?
Right. Exactly. So it makes sense.
Yeah. I'm like, I gotta emulate Todd, you know? Plus I knew I could just do the track from memory. So I did it. But Fernando mixed it. And he was like the executive producer of the album.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, sure. You can do it all by yourself. He didn't, you know, like, I asked him later on, I said, did anybody else do that besides me? And he goes, no, you're the only one. So on a lot of the album, it's Fernando playing everything. And yeah. I heard some of that and I just thought, I need this guy. Like, I would love to work with this guy.
I feel like every artist on that album should have done it themselves, like you did and like Todd did.
You know, some of them could have. Maybe they just didn't have the time or something.
Maybe. It is time consuming when you're doing it all, I'm sure.
Yeah, it can be, yeah.
Let me ask you about something on the website. If you go to marshallcrenshaw.com and you click on the button that says records, here's what it says. Over the past few years, I've been lucky to be able to curate and re-release some of the albums I've made. There are more on the way. Mm. Right now we have these. So what might be on the way? You're teasing us with this.
Well, I guess you could say that. It's, you know, like my third and fourth Warner Brothers albums.
Downtown
from 1986. Yeah, you were going to say it. Mary Jean and Nine Others from 1987. How's that for a hack album title? But anyway, those two. Yeah, those are
I always thought that was a fun album title.
Oh,
like,
okay.
Because like, I read it and I'm like, oh, you could go, oh, I didn't know what to come up with, so this is what we decided on. But I like that. Mary Jean and Nine Others. It's exactly what the album is.
Exactly. Okay.
All right. Keep going. I interrupted.
No, that's all. You know, like, we're going to do something with those two, and I think it's going to be, you know, it's not like, I don't have release dates on this yet.
Okay.
I think I have to keep prodding them a little bit about this, but we're supposed to be doing this, and the first thing is going to be like an album of, again, like home recordings and live recordings from the time period,
okay,
of those two albums, you know, like mid 80s. So there's going to be a package like that at the end of this year or the beginning of next year. The two albums are going to just come out both on the same album, both on the same CD.
Okay, cool. Like, yeah. Like put them together as a double.
Put them together as a double, yeah. That's my answer to what to do about that.
The first time I saw you live was on the Mary Jean and Nine Others tour at a club in Pittsburgh called Graffiti's.
Okay.
And I remember the bass drum head broke, or the bass drum broke. And while that was getting fixed, the drummer just kind of played on a couple of chairs or something. They just put, and you guys just worked through it until they fixed it instead of stopping down completely. And I thought that this is what a live show really is.
I remember that. Now that you mentioned that place was downstairs, right?
Yeah, I believe so.
Oh, yeah. I remember that night. Now that you've reminded me about the drum head breaking. Do you remember the opening act we had last night? That we had that night?
I don't remember.
It was a band called Firetown.
Wow.
With Butch Vig and all those guys that are in that band Garbage now.
That's crazy.
They had a band called Firetown. That was like their first album that they put out.
That is crazy. No, I don't remember that at all. You were living it, so you remember it on a day-to-day basis.
I remember that. And I also remember that during that time, we were like using a lot of amplifiers and a lot of gear. And I remember thinking about feeling bad for the guys that were carrying our equipment around because they're having to go up and down these stairs with all this stuff. But anyway, we were all young then, so.
Yeah, a little easier.
Could do stuff like that, yeah.
Touring right now, the whole band's on a tour bus together?
No, I don't like those things. And
okay, so
I don't
how do you guys do it? How do you do
it? We just have like a, I drive a car, you know, like even if I was on a bus tour right now, I would have a car and just drive that. When you're on a bus tour, you got to travel on the bus. You got to go where the bus goes.
Yeah.
I get stir crazy. And so, like I said, if I was on a bus tour, I would have a car and just travel separately. So that's what I do. I just drive a car. Sometimes I have Derek with me. Sometimes I have Fernando with me. Sometimes I don't have anybody with me.
And so that you're not exhausted from driving to each gig and then doing the gig. That would exhaust me.
No, I mean, it's actually like invigorating. We toured in March, you know, and I hadn't been out in a while, but you know, and then we do work, you know, it's like,
yeah,
it's work intensive. No, after the end of it, I felt great. And I was like, I should do this more often. It's good. You know, it's good to move your body and just get out there. And I've just always liked road trips anyway, as long as I'm cool and, you know, set some ground rules and follow them.
Yeah.
And don't do anything crazy, then enjoy it still, you know. And plus now I drive an electric car, so my conscience doesn't bother me.
And then you have to make sure that that's charged up enough to get from gig one to gig two to gig three.
I do, but I've been doing it for about 2 years now, so I really got the hang of it.
Oh, well, that's good. That is not something I expected to hear, that Marshall Crenshaw likes to drive to the gigs.
I do, you know, I still do.
And then,
I don't do, if I did it too much, then I wouldn't like it, but
true.
You know, it's just going to be like 3 months this year out of 12.
Yeah.
And so, like I said, I just, it got me really charged up last time I did it.
Then at the end of when the last show ends, you know that your next destination is you're driving home.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
that's
yeah.
Pretty cool.
Yeah, it can be. And I've just done it all my life, you know, so.
So why not keep it? That'll make you feel young, continuing to do it like that.
Yeah, I guess people that do this kind of stuff tend to be people that like road trips, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess you would have to be. Yeah.
Yeah. You would have to be. I remember the first time I ever drove across the country, how exciting it was. You know, I'd never been west of the Mississippi River up until I was like 23 or something like that. And then I drove out to LA with this friend of mine from high school who was living out there. I just ran into him one day in Michigan and I said, oh, I haven't seen you in a while. Where have you been? And he goes, oh, I'm living out in L.A. and I'm going back in about a month. And I said, oh, I'm going to go with you. You mind? Just spontaneously, I decided to do it.
That's cool.
And, yeah. And I haven't been back. I'm still on that trip, kind of, you know.
Shout out to another song I love. I've always loved it, is Driving and Dreaming, another Crenshaw Burn composition. That's also on the new release?
Yes.
I've been driving and dreaming neath the black night sky. 80 miles an hour, still the time drags by. Missed on the windshield and my thoughts take flight. Driving and dreaming, feeling lost in space tonight. I've been leaving a trail of stars.
And again, everybody, this album comes out August 29th. You can pre-order it right now on all formats. I have to bring up something that's not fun to talk about, but the last time I saw you live was at the Alex Theater in Glendale on February 10th, 2024. And Jill Sobule was the opening act. And very, very tragic to hear that we lost her this year. And I just wanted to ask you, what was she like to just be around? Because her energy on stage that night was just, it just was really uplifting. And I had never seen her live before. And I came away a really big fan of Jill's.
Yeah, Jill was just somebody with a lot of spirit, you know, like a powerful spirit. And you know, kind of fearless too. And, you know, just had a really strong heart, a lot of, and like, you know, like deeply held principles, but a great sense of fun, sense of humor. And I knew her for a long time. I mean, I was on a tribute show to her a couple of months ago. And I'm like, I have about 7 or 8 Jill stories, you know, and they're all really cool stories, but I had to pick one out of that whole group. But she just was somebody, you know, like her, she had a big presence, you know,
yeah,
put energy in a space. I really liked her. I wanted her to do all the West Coast shows that we did. Not just that one. I don't know what happened with that. Like, it never really got talked out properly amongst all the parties, or maybe she was busy. But anyway, she did come and play with us just that one time.
That was the one.
Been more, but we were on a lot of shows together over the years, and plus we have some, you know, some really good mutual friends. Like, she was friends with Wayne Kramer and Margaret, and that's the funny thing is when I saw her at the Alex Theater. It was going to be the first time I'd seen her since Wayne passed away. And I was really looking forward to being able to talk to her about him, you know?
Yeah.
And now she's gone. So there's a whole lot of that going around. That's what I mean about I can't backtrack. I got to keep moving forward.
Got to keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Did you perform a Jill song that night at the tribute?
I did. Yeah. It was called If I Had a Jetpack.
Oh, I know that one. That's a great one.
Yeah. No, she was a great artist.
One more thing about Jill. My favorite thing that night was when you were on stage doing your set, I turned around and she was sitting like 3 rows behind me in the audience watching your show.
Oh, well, how about that?
And that's, you know, cool. I'm thinking, like, she could have watched from the side of the stage, but she wanted to enjoy it as, you know, as we were enjoying it. And that was kind of cool.
Or she could have left.
Or she could have left.
Yeah. Like, left the building and gone and done something else. But no, that's so sweet. I didn't even think about that, whether she heard the show or not.
Yeah. Oh, she definitely did. She, big smile on her face. All right.
Yeah,
with that, Marshall.
She was a good pal.
With that, Marshall, I just want to let people know one more time. The album is called From the Hellhole, 14 tracks. There's covers on there, and there's a demo, and there's all these original songs that if you haven't heard these, you need to hear these. And it comes out, as I said earlier, it comes out August 29th. Marshall, will you be playing some of the songs on this from this album where they make their way into the set list?
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, a good few of them have always been in the set.
Yeah, right.
So, like, we know them already. And, you know. Yeah, so the answer is yeah.
The answer
absolutely.
Is yes.
Yes.
And my last question to you is, for our playout song today, which track from the Hellhole would you like me to use as our playout song?
Oh, how about Move Now? Because that's the plug side, the radio single.
Okay.
It's a nice song about paranoia and societal breakdown and all that kind of stuff. So it seems like it might be a good one to hear today.
and that's another Crenshaw Dan Byrne composition. And I love that tune also. So with that, everybody go out and see Marshall Crenshaw on tour, buy this new record, and I'll see you in North Carolina soon. And
great.
Everyone else, Please enjoy Move Now. Thank you, Marshall.
Thank you, Pat. Thanks so much, man.
Nice to see you.
Well, thank you. Nice to see you too.
All right. I'll do my intro and we'll be off and running. I see that we wore the correct uniform today.
I should have a towel dispenser over there with these t-shirts in them because every day, nearly every day, I just put
one. Me too. Jeans and a black t-shirt. That's it's classic. All right. Here we go.